This hour brought to you by GCNLife.com. Eliminate bags under your eyes in minutes with Instantly Ageless from GCNLife.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
You know, it's a shame that no matter who I put in, they go after him. It's very, very sad, I have to say.
President Trump speaking to reporters there a short time ago about his decision to make Matt Whitaker acting attorney general following the recent resignation of Jeff Sessions.
I don't know Matt Whitaker. Matt Whitaker worked for Jeff Sessions, and he was always extremely highly thought of, and he still is.
The president's critics noting that Whitaker has criticized the investigation being conducted by special counsel Robert Mueller, and many believe that this may be part of a plan by the White House to kill that investigation. Tens of thousands of people being evacuated from their homes in Northern and Southern California because of some huge wildfires being fueled by Santa Ana winds, which are going to stay active for the next few days. This is USA Radio News.
This is a national health alert from the Healthcare Hotline. Are you on Medicare and/or have private insurance and suffer from back pain? MD Topical has a solution for you. Today, you can qualify to receive a pain-relieving treatment, such as a comfortable back brace or a customized pain treatment, at little or no cost. Call MD Topical toll-free now, 877-875-5909. It just takes a couple of minutes to qualify for these amazing treatments that have helped thousands of people with severe pain. Your personalized pain treatment will be delivered directly to your door. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com and get started on your road to a pain-free life. Call MD Topical toll-free, 877-875-5909, or go to mdtopical.com.
An estimated 1,800 people turned out for a vigil in Thousand Oaks, California last night to remember the victims of a mass shooting at a bar there on Wednesday night, which left 12 people dead and 13 counting the gunman.
Today, our purpose is to unite as one singular community.
That's one of the religious leaders at the vigil last night. Meanwhile, there's a report today that the gunman may have been live on social media during the massacre. Florida Governor Rick Scott ordering a state investigation of elections offices in Palm Beach and Broward counties in the face of possible recounts in three statewide races there. Scott narrowly leads Democrat Bill Nelson in the race for U.S. Senate, but he wants to look into accusations that those two counties failed to certify the results. President Trump and the First Lady are in flight now, heading to Paris, where they'll join other world leaders to commemorate the end of World War I this weekend. And this is USA Radio News.
Everyone loves liberty, so why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty Health Share. Liberty Health Share is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Stop letting others tell you what to do. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information, or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
The captain of a duck boat in Missouri that sank, killing 17 people over the summer during a storm, is now facing federal charges. The U.S. Attorney Tim Garrison says
the indictment alleges that Mr. McKee failed to properly assess incoming severe weather, both prior to and after entering the water, Table Rock Lake. Entered the vessel on the water while there was severe weather, including high winds and lightning.
51-year-old Captain Kenneth McKee could do 10 years in prison and pay $250,000 in fines if he's convicted. There's been an alarming decline in the number of children born as the global fertility rate continues to fall. More from USA Radio's John Clemens.
The study published in the medical journal Lancet reports nearly half of countries were now facing what is termed a baby bust, meaning there are insufficient children being born to maintain their population size. Here in the U.S., the fertility rate has fallen to a record low for a second straight year, extending a deep decline that first began in 2008 with the Great Recession. Around the world in 1950, women were having an average of 4.7 children in their lifetime. That rate is now at 2.4 children.
And Pittsburgh Steeler Antonio Brown's being cited for driving 100 miles an hour in a 45-mile-an-hour zone. Brown could get 90 days in jail for that. Find us online at usaradio.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry My Pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
You didn't think they'd get away with it, did you?
Well, hello, America. 6 minutes after the top of the hour, Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. All the information there waits for you. Our next guest, Sarah Williams, is someone I've been especially looking forward to. Her story is, on one hand, so tragic, but so profound, on the other hand, that you cannot know what you can possibly experience until you go through all that her and her husband went through. And it's captured in her book, Perfectly Human. It is a book that Christianity Today calls a profoundly moving and wise book. Publishers Weekly says readers will be touched by Williams' story of perseverance, faith, and love. A little bit of her background. She's trained as a historian at the University of Oxford, where she subsequently taught British and European political and cultural history. After 17 years at Oxford in 2005, she moved with her family to Vancouver, Canada, where she taught history at Regent College. Today, she lives with her husband, Paul, in Cotswold, close to the city of Oxford. I hope I'm saying that city correct. Am I saying that right, Sarah?
Did you say Burford?
I said Cotswold.
Yeah,
they said that's where you're living now. Anyway, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't butchering it too badly here.
No, not at all.
Well, Sarah, welcome to Bill Martinez Live. Good to have you on the show. How are you?
Thank you. Thank you for letting me come and talk to you.
Well, your story, Perfectly Human, 9 months well Syrian, which has just been released on paperback, is a profound story. Tell us about Perfectly Human.
The book tells the story of our experience, Paul and myself, discovering at a regular 20-week prenatal scan that our third daughter would likely die either at birth or shortly afterwards. And it tells the story of how we journeyed through the pregnancy expecting our daughter to die. We were advised by medical staff to terminate the pregnancy after the scan, and we decided not to do that, but instead to see what God would do.
For most people in today's, growing liberal environment, where abortions are done almost without high consideration. So I think things are changing now, especially in light of the Gosnell movie that was recently released here in the United States, and also with the increasing use of sonogram. It's really opening the eyes of women particularly, and men included, to realize that it's not what Planned Parenthood or others would lead you to believe, like it's just some ball of flesh, like a tumor or something, it's being removed, that it is a human life. And so for what you and Paul had to go through, to first of all, understand that this was the possibility, but there's always God, right?
Yeah, it's interesting how you describe that shift that's taking place in culture, because we have for a very long time not had language to talk about the unborn. And I think increasingly we're coming to recognize the personhood of the unborn. Science is expanding our understanding of life in the womb and women's own experience. Just as you carry a child, you know that you're carrying a person, and you start to have a relationship with that person even before they're born. And that was very much our experience carrying our little daughter to term.
Right. And for you, when you and Paul were confronted with this situation, it was interesting, Sarah, because my daughter, we're here in Hawaii, as I mentioned to you, and our two-year-old grandson was, it was determined that around the 20-week point in his life that there was going to be a heart defect that they were going to have to deal with. And the doctor gave the kids the option, said, you know, you might want to seriously think about aborting him. And it really crushed my daughter because she was already at that point before even seeing the sonogram. She was at this point, no, we're committed. And she called me later and said, Dad, I was really insulted that the doctor would say this. And I said, honey, you got to understand, in today's litigious society here in America, they've got to cover everything. They've got to present options to you. And I said, well, what was his attitude once he realized that you and her husband, Dave, even that they committed to this pregnancy? He said that he just did a 180. He was very supportive, and I said, great. I said, then you're in good hands. And they went through the pregnancy. Jackson, our two-year-old grandson, was born with a hole in his heart. And this kid is a miracle baby in so many ways. He's gone through a couple of open heart surgeries, but if you saw him, Sarah, today, I mean, it's like nothing's happened to this kid. You know, once he started walking, he found first gear, and he's been going ever since. So it has been such a blessing to watch him. And we were just talking about this last night, the whole experience. And she goes, Dad, I believe God let us go through this and led us through this season of our life and this experience so that we could encourage others, because you know, we can't even imagine, you know, a world without Jackson right now.
Yeah, it's incredible the way in our culture there's an immense amount of fear about abnormality. Even that word itself is so problematic, isn't it? Because it relies on a particular kind of definition of normality, which is actually highly subjective. And there's so much fear in our culture, as though somehow we're going to be crushed as mothers, as parents, if we find that we've got children whose lives, for whatever reason, will be challenging and, in society's language, somehow suboptimal. And yet we need diversity in our culture. We desperately need to know how to receive one another, no matter what kind of bodies we have, no matter what biological sex we are, that we need to find a way of welcoming, unconditionally welcoming, the gifts that God gives us. We seem to think of children as possessions, somehow as commodities that we get to design, and we control the timing, and we increasingly get to select the genetic makeup. That's becoming a major issue now. And yet children are not possessions. They're gifts ultimately belonging to God himself.
And what are we to know about what that child, even for you, Syrian, what she brought, you know, to this world, what she brought to you and Paul and your family and others? I mean, there's countries, you know, where I'm reading about that if a child determined to be, you know, of a Down syndrome consequence, it's almost immediate. You just abort the child because you cannot be allowed to have a less than in the society. And why should society have to carry the weight for this this defect, right?
Yes, that's right. And if we just imagine forward into the kind of culture that doesn't know how to make room for the weak. If we're doing that at the beginning of life, we will also begin to do that at the end of life and throughout life at every stage. And so increasingly we're creating this impossible value system for ourselves where we have to be strong, we have to be capable, we have to have bodies that have high utility function to way, as it were, for humanness. That's a fearsome kind of culture.
Without a doubt, Sarah, we've got to pause for just a moment, go to break. We've got more from Sarah Williams after this. Stay with us.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
Bags under the eyes, crow's feet, fine lines and wrinkles are things adults complain about as they age. Now, there's Instantly Ageless. It works in minutes and is great for men and women.
I've probably noticed in the past 5 years that my eyes have gained a lot of fine lines, wrinkles, my crow's feet have gotten deeper. Wow. I was hoping for 5 years, but that's like what my eyes looked like 10 years ago.
That is really cool. Wrinkle gone?
It's easy. Just put it on your finger and go.
Now, I wish I had more down here because I can still see one wrinkle.
I am a little bit emotional. I'm turning 40. I didn't think would be a big deal to me, but that looks like the me that I feel like inside instead of what I see when I look in the mirror.
Try Instantly Ageless today at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com. 30-day money-back guarantee and preferred price discount at GCNLife.com. That's GCNLife.com.
In these uncertain times, it makes sense to have a sustainable backup method to cook food and boil water. If your current plan includes using a fuel-burning stove or cooking over an open fire, then there's a much better way. The Minuteman Rocket Stove is a biomass-burning cooking stove that only requires small quantities of sticks and twigs for fuel. The Minuteman Stove is easy to use, smokeless, portable, powerful, and sustainable for the finest in survival cooking stoves and fire starters made right here in the USA. Go to MinutemanStove.com. That's MinutemanStove.com.
The final phase of extermination is set to commence now, and as population die-off becomes evident, you know it is the time of punishment in all that is written. The cover for mass die-off is evolution and global warming frauds, also used as false proof of their Christ. They are from the lines that were disinherited 2,000 years ago. Now they claim to be his Christ based upon blood type, DNA, and long lifespan. Go to unveilingthem.com. That's UNVEILINGthem.com.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. Do you feel like you're losing control over your finances? If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, we can help you take back control. The IRS is the largest and most aggressive collection agency in the world, and they can seize your bank account, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Take control of your tax problems now by calling the experts at Tax Mediation Services and take advantage of the Fresh Start program and new laws that may allow us to negotiate a settlement for the lowest amount possible. Our team of tax attorneys and enrolled agents can stop collections and get you protected so you can take control of your financial future. Tax Mediation Services is accredited by the Better Business Bureau. Call now for a free case review and a price protection guaranteed quote.
Call Tax Mediation Services now at 800-318-1251. That's 800-318-1251. 800-318-1251.
Epigenetics and the Sins of the Father. GodSaidManSaid.com. U.S. colleges, new mental institutions. Close Satan's secret door. GodSaidManSaid.com. Mummies and the Sons of Ham. Alcohol and Christians. Geologists say yes to crucifixion. GodSaidManSaid.com. Which religion? Which Bible? Quantum physics to Adam's rib. Hours of text and streaming audio. GodSaidManSaid.com.
America, Bill Martinez here. Our conversation with Sarah Williams continues. Her book, Perfectly Human, describes the short life of Syrian, which means Welsh for loved one, as her family comes to terms with the ultimate purpose of their daughter's short life. Her birthday and her death day are exactly the same, but the impact that Syrian had, that God knew that Syrian would have on you and your family, and for those of our listeners right now, Sarah, cetera, that are hearing the story, the decision that you and Paul were faced with after the 20-week sonogram, saying that chances of her survival were pretty well nil, and with that came a recommendation to abort Syrian, but you said, no, we're going to trust in God, and you went through the process. What else were you and Paul considering at that time?
We had to think quite carefully about our two older daughters. That was a difficult question. What would it mean for them, for us to carry this baby to term? We also had to face the possibility that she might, against all the odds, live, but with a life-limiting condition. Those were difficult questions. And at the time, it felt like an incredibly heavy weight to carry, to be placed in the situation, not just the option of having a termination, but actually having to choose whether or not to terminate the life of another person. And in a way, I had not really thought before that point what the impact was for women placed in this position. It might only be a tiny minority of parents who face the heartache that Paul and I did with fetal abnormality. And yet, what we allow for the tiny minority in our culture reflects our value systems as a majority culture. And it seems astounding to me that the very first question we ask of a human being is, do they have a, quote, normal body? Mm-hmm. None of us would want to have that question asked first about us before we're given the dignity of personhood. And yet, that's increasingly what we're doing to every unborn child.
How did your children, your two daughters, what was their reaction during this nine-month period?
It was hard for them to understand. It's hard to say, here's a baby, and that baby's not going to live. We had a five-year-old and an eight-year-old. But they journeyed with us. It was an amazing grace gift from God for us as a family. They were involved in naming our daughter, finding a Welsh name for her. They were able to celebrate her life. They made things for their sister. They painted pictures. And then, of course, we were able, as a family, to have the incredible dignity and gift of a funeral. That's something you don't get to do when you have a termination. And we were able, as a family, to celebrate Carrion's life and bring together all the music and the verses from the Bible that had been special to us and gather those memories up and really honor and celebrate her life in a funeral. And that was a precious gift. They always miss having a sister. Yeah. Nothing ever takes away the grief of losing a child. Yeah.
Yeah, and I misspoke. I said Syrian. It's Carrion.
Yes,
which
hard,
is lost
though.
For a loved one. Yes.
It's hard. It's a hard name to pronounce, but yes. Yes.
Yes. Well, actually, I mean, it's right there, and you just have to remember the C is a hard C,
yeah.
But for a precious one, loved one, and the impact that it had, that she had on your daughters, and for you and Paul, and I imagine, that were near to you, your family, what was their response?
The most remarkable responses were actually from my colleagues at the University of Oxford. It was very hard for my colleagues to understand why I had made the choice I'd made to carry through to all the way through a pregnancy. It was a very difficult pregnancy for me, and as the story tells, in the end it was actually, I don't want to give the story away, but it was very problematic for me health-wise. And it was hard for my colleagues to understand. And Oxford's a place where people like to engage in debate and conversation and feisty argument. And there were some really complex arguments that people raised. Is it actually morally right to know, to bring into existence a person who you know will suffer? Is that ethical? Others of my colleagues colleagues, particularly one of my literary colleagues, very pronounced ideological feminist, really found it troubling that I didn't exercise my right as a woman to choose to protect myself by going down the route of termination. And those colleagues were really vocal in those opinions, and that was really quite hard, but it was also quite profound, because I had opportunities over and over and over again just to very simply say that this child's a gift and I want to love her for as long as I can. And even saying that had quite a transformative effect on the people around me.
Well, I bet, because how do you argue against that? But yet human reasoning, as you say, you're bringing a child into the world that doctors have given you, a very poor forecast. And also the other thing was you were putting your own health at risk. Well, these are basic feminist arguments that with human reasoning, you just do the expedient thing, the convenient thing, and you terminate. But you trusted in God. You knew that God had a greater story than human reasoning.
Yes, that's true. Although in a way, it didn't. To talk about it in terms of us trusting God somehow paints a picture of us having lots of faith. And the extraordinary thing wasn't our faith, but it was the immensity of God's love and grace. And that was the thing that overwhelmed Paul and I through the 16 weeks after the scan before Karen's birth. It wasn't so much our love for our child, though we did feel love, but it was the deep, deep sense that God unconditionally and completely loved this baby, who didn't even have any legal rights, who was entirely dependent on us for everything. And God radically trusted us, you know, fallen human beings with limited, limited love and limited faith. He trusted us, and it was God's immense love that was the driving force behind it. And it was that was so transformative for me. And it was like a conversion experience, because I had only ever really spent my life defining who I was on the basis of my achievements, my work, my faculty position. All of these things mattered to me. And yet, what I realized during those 16 weeks was God unconditionally loved this little baby who was vulnerable by the world's standards, and he loved me in exactly the same way. And I always thought it was the things I did that made me valuable. And the gift that Karen was to me was she turned that value system upside down, and I saw God's unconditional love in a way that I had never experienced it before. And it was really profoundly transformative.
Well, I'll tell you, I can tell that Karen's life story continues to be written in the hearts of you and Paul and the girls, but those of us that are hearing this story as well. What an incredible legacy for someone whose birthday and death day is on the same day, and it continues to live. I mean, this is the choice that we have, as you said early on. We're given the choice between life and death, and the Bible says choose life. In case you may be a bit confused, and I'm sure today that choice for you is even more profound, and I know for us hearing your story. Sarah Williams, her book, A Perfectly Human, a profoundly moving and wise book is what Christianity called it. Sarah, thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it. God bless.
Thank you.
This report is brought to you by the National Endowment for Financial Education. The student loan debt crisis is among the most serious economic challenges facing young adults today. With Americans owing more than $1.5 trillion in student loans, many families struggle with college affordability even decades after graduation. October marks the opening period for the free application for federal student aid, FAFSA, and it's recommended parents don't miss out on available money to help offset the rising costs of a higher education. Patricia Seaman, financial expert.
Parents and their soon-to-be college-age children should work together and pay careful attention to options available to fund higher education. Among the considerations are understanding public versus private loans, where to look for scholarships and grants, and how working while in school, whether through work study or other jobs, can help lower the burden of debt. Mitigating the damage from student loan debt is essential for our families' finances and our children's future.
Understanding the various types of financial aid can help families save thousands. For more, visit smartaboutmoney.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
You know, it's a shame that no matter who I put in, they go after him. It's very, very sad, I have to say.
President Trump speaking to reporters there a short time ago about his decision to make Matt Whitaker acting attorney general following the recent resignation of Jeff Sessions.
I don't know Matt Whitaker. Matt Whitaker worked for Jeff Sessions, and he was always extremely highly thought of, and he still is.
The president's critics noting that Whitaker has criticized the investigation being conducted by special counsel Robert Mueller, and many believe that this may be part of a plan by the White House to kill that investigation. Tens of thousands of people being evacuated from their homes in Northern and Southern California because of some huge wildfires being fueled by Santa Ana winds, which are going to stay active for the next few days. This is USA Radio News.
Indeed knows finding the right hire takes time away from your business.
Hiring a qualified data engineer felt like a second job.
More job seekers use Indeed than any other site, so there's no better place to find someone with the skills you're looking for.
I needed someone with a master's in computer science and database experience.
Plus, Indeed screener questions help you find your shortlist fast.
Now I'm back to having just one job.
See why more than 3 million companies worldwide use Indeed to hire. Post your job at Indeed.com/hire. Indeed, the world's number one job site. Source.com score total visits.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
We don't see color here. We just love America. You call me
out. Welcome back, America. 28 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you want to go to BillMartinezLive.com. Stephen Talty is going to be joining us in just a moment. His new book, Saving Bravo, which just released, tells the scrupulous, researched, never-before-told story of one of the greatest rescue missions, not just of the Vietnam War, but the entire Cold War. And let me tell you, when you read this story, and you will burn through the pages. It is absolutely engaging. Let's go back to 1972. That was the end of my service in the Marine Corps, I'll tell you. And the Vietnam War was pretty much a lost cause at that point. Public support in the U.S. had cratered. The soldiers and airmen who returned home were called mercenaries. Their cars were keyed on Air Force bases. Nixon was searching for a way to leave the battlefield, but thousands of Americans were still fighting for their lives, grasping for some meaning to their service, if you can imagine. At the time, few American airmen were more valuable than Lieutenant Colonel Gene Hamilton. And this is who the story is all about. He carried highly classified information. He knew secrets about cutting-edge missile technology that didn't just concern Vietnam, but could change the course of the Cold War itself. When Hamilton was shot down behind enemy lines amid North Vietnam's Easter Offensive, he was left to lie and wait to be rescued in the middle of one of the fiercest ground battles since World War II. Stephen, welcome to Bill Martinez. I wanted to give a little bit of that background there so the people knew what they were in for in this exciting new book that's just releasing, as I mentioned, Saving Bravo.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Well, so here he is. He's lying in wait. All by himself, as we would say in the Hispanic culture, solito lindo. But probably, you know, sitting there wondering, okay, what is going on? How long was he left to his own devices?
Well, he expected to only really be there till dawn. He was shot down around dusk, so he thought by the next morning he'd be out. Because by that time, the air cavalry had really perfected the airborne rescue. So the two rescue helicopters would go in with some fighter jets that would kind of blow away the AAA anti-aircraft guns. Mm-hmm. And they would swoop in and get this guy out. So this this had been going on the whole war, but what they didn't realize was this invasion force, which was really like something out of World War II. It was tanks, it was Soviet artillery, it was SAM missiles, were grouped all around Hamilton, and this invasion had just started, so they really didn't know the size of it. So he thought he was going to be out in a few hours, but it literally went on for 12 days.
Well, was this one of those unlucky stops for Hamilton, or did the North Vietnamese know that he was there or had an idea and they circled him? What was the situation?
No, it was just bad luck. They knew that they had gotten an important aircraft and they celebrated it on Radio Hanoi. But so they were looking for someone. They knew there was a downed airman there. They didn't know how valuable he was, because this is a guy who'd been in the Air Force almost 30 years. He'd been sort of given, like, classified information, like where our missiles were pointed in the Soviet Union, which, you know, the KGB had some agents in Hanoi, so had he been captured, he very well might have been tortured and made to give up those secrets. So his value sort of went beyond the Vietnam War to the whole kind of global conflict.
Exactly. So the information he had was in his head. It wasn't necessarily in a folder or anything like that, right?
Totally in his head.
Right. Wow. So here he is. Time is running out, as you say. I mean, he's there for 12 days. Thinks it's going to be less than an overnight stay, but he's there for 12 days. You write that he's hallucinating, half starved, pretty much. I imagine half starved plus.
I mean, he's a 53-year-old guy. He thought he was, he thought he was going to sort of make his mark in World War II, which he had volunteered for. Had been drafted for. You know, he'd been flying above battlegrounds for years and never really got down in the muck and saw war up close. So he had very little fresh water, almost no food. And we're sending, rescue operation after operation to him. And these helicopters keep getting blown out of the sky. And the crews are being killed simply because he's surrounded by this kind of ring of iron that we don't know about.
Right.
So it goes on and on. And then finally, the commander in Vietnam said, we're losing too many guys. We've spent millions of dollars on this. And they came very close to canceling the mission. And that's when they kind of went back to first principles. They said, we need to get, men with rifles in there overland, no helicopters, just send them in. But the problem is he's surrounded by 30,000 enemy NVA. So that's a separate kind of, almost near suicidal mission.
Exactly. Well, I got to imagine, what's the enemy thinking? I mean, they keep, seeing these attack helicopters coming in, and they've got to be thinking there's some assets nearby or they wouldn't be coming back, huh?
Yeah, and often what the North Vietnamese would do is if they knew there was an airman down and he was valued, they would just let that guy sit there, and then they would let the helicopters and fighter jets come, and they would kind of lay in wait until they were right over the target, and then they would open up on them. It just became like kind of an ambush situation for them. It brought the Americans to them in a way that they felt they could defeat them. So, so Hamilton is growing weaker. He's having visions of having conversations with his wife, who's back home in Arizona. And, the military is worried that he might either pass out or actually just kind of lose his wits and go wandering into a village and announce that he needs to go home or something, something crazy. Because at one point, the forward air controller who's flying above sees him on the ground waving a white handkerchief in the middle of the day. And, the soldiers are all around, and he could easily been captured right there. So they had to order him back into the brush. But he's really losing his wits at this point.
Exactly. Well, imagine, half starved, as you say, he's hallucinating. He's there by himself. I mean, it's a tough deal. So then, they're about ready to scrap the mission and then decide, hey, let's go back and, let's get the SEALs in there, huh?
Yep. There's only really one Navy SEAL available, a guy named Tommy Norris. And so he led a bunch of South Vietnamese Sea Commandos upriver. And first they got another guy who'd been shot down trying to get Hamilton out. And by the time they get ready to go for Hamilton, the other commandos are like, this is not worth it. This is one American guy. We're not going to risk our lives because the mission is just so dangerous. So it ends up being just Norris and his South South Vietnamese partner, a guy named Nguyen Van Ky, who volunteers to go. And those two guys go upriver with their rifles in a canoe, black peasant hats, and really nothing else, like no air cover right over them. So
two guys against 30,000 North Vietnamese soldiers? Doesn't
really
seem fair,
yeah.
Does it?
I mean, I can't even calculate what the odds of them coming back that night were, but they went ahead and did it.
Amazing. And, of course, this had brought a lot of attention. So what was this doing in terms of the war effort for the Americans? Were they kind of like a bit distracted up until this point?
Well, actually, there was some conflict because a lot of the airplanes and helicopters that were being kind of dedicated to getting Hamilton out would have really been used to blunt this attack on South Vietnam. So, you know, these attackers are coming through the wire and they're killing our allies, and there are Marine advisors attached to these units, and they're screaming over the telephones like, "Where's our air support?" And they're telling them, "Well, we have a guy down. You're going to have to wait." And these guys are losing their minds because you can't do that in the middle of a war. Mm. You can't kind of break off and go get one of your guys while kind of the equivalent of the Battle of the Bulge is going on.
Exactly.
So
right.
it definitely cost us lives, but there was just a sense of brotherhood among the airmen over there where they're like, "We're not going to leave our guy behind."
Yeah. We're talking with the author of Saving Bravo that's just been released. Stephen Stalte is with us, and we're discussing one of the greatest rescue missions, not just of the Vietnam War, but the entire Cold War. And we got more from Stephen after this. Stay with us.
If Ernest Hemingway was alive today, would he say this to you?
Shakespeare, Mark Twain, Edgar Allan Poe, all great writers. And after reading your book, I simply must add you to the list.
Wait, you don't have a book yet. So make a free call to Page Publishing. Their expert staff can help you turn your book idea into a real book, a masterpiece that could someday make the bestseller list in hard copy and digitally all across the world. Page Publishing can help you completely take your idea for a book, write it, and publish it. So if you want to join the ranks of some of the most famous authors in the world, call now for a free information kit. Turn your book idea into publishing gold. Make a free call right now to Page Publishing.
800-596-2154. 800-596-2154. 800-596-2154. That's 800-596-2154.
Life insurance is one of those things that just about everybody needs, but few people actually have. Hey, if you die unexpectedly without life insurance, guess what? You'll leave your family with even a bigger mess. Life insurance will help replace your family's income. It'll help cover burial expenses. Life insurance can even help pay off debt like credit cards and medical bills. Life insurance can even pay for college. And if you own a business and you die, life insurance can help your business from collapsing. It can even help cover estate taxes. Life insurance has never been more affordable and needed. Plus, you can always shop around even if you have a plan and save some money. So call the Life Insurance Quote Line right now for free pricing information.
800-915-9164, 800-915-9164, 800-915-9164. That's 800-915-9164.
Childhood is full of wonder, and we get the chance to relive it with our grandchildren every day. But imagine missing special moments with a grandchild or seeing them through cloudy vision. The Foundation Fighting Blindness can help by providing valuable information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Age-related macular degeneration is the leading cause of vision loss in people 55 and older, but it doesn't have to be. The Foundation Fighting Blindness is driving research and saving sight by providing information about diagnosing and treating AMD. Don't miss a moment of your grandchildren's youthful wonder because of poor vision. Learn more about vision-saving preventions and treatments. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD. Or go to the website fightblindness.org where you can find so much helpful information. Call 1-800-BLINDNESS today. That number again is 1-800-BLINDNESS or fightblindness.org.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What more could you want? Bill Martinez live.
Back with you, America's Promise, 14 minutes before the top of the hour. His book has just been released, Saving Bravo. Stephen Talty is with us. We're talking about one of the greatest rescue missions, not just of the Vietnam War, but the entire Cold War. This is a never-before-told story. Stephen, how did you come across the story?
Well, you know, I have to say it's been told, but it's been fictionalized. There's a movie called Bat 21 with Gene Hackman, and it's based on this event, but Hollywood kind of decided to fictionalize a lot of it. They created new characters, and they created dialogue. And what they really forgot were the stories of the 11 men who didn't come back from this mission. So I had known about the movie, and I was just sort of impressed by the self-sacrifice and courage that these guys exhibited, and I really wanted to tell their story. So I found some of the survivors who'd been over there, and a bunch of the families of the guys who didn't come back, and just started learning these fascinating stories of why these men were there. You know, some of them, you know, didn't really believe the war was fulfilling its mission. One guy, a pilot, had actually thought of running off to Canada because he was so upset by the civilian casualties. So, you know, there was a broad range of feeling about the war, but when this man went down, people were volunteering left and right because this is something that gave their service meaning. Obviously, the war wasn't going the way we wanted.
Right.
It was incredibly unpopular at home, so it wasn't the World War II scenario that a lot of them had grown up with, but they still wanted to give their service meaning. So getting a guy out, saving him from torture, keeping our secrets away from the Soviets, that to them was a worthwhile mission. So, you know, that's what sort of gave this mission kind of its halo. This is why the guys wanted to be part of it.
Exactly. Well, it was as if the government lost control of the narrative of Vietnam, maybe for lots of reasons. There's been a lot of documentaries about it and conjecture. You get the men there, you know, in the combat zone. As I said, I was in the Marine Corps. I was stationed stateside, and I was at the Public Affairs Office in Camp Pendleton, California. So we're getting the stories and information, and it was disheartening to hear what was going on there, this war, the way it was fought, and I mean, we can debate, you know, the how much civilians should be involved in fighting the war, but that was one of the things came out loud and clear for me, was that there were too many civilians involved in the strategic warfare and the execution of this mission, and it got so compromised. And as you said, it lost popularity at home with the burning of draft cards and all the demonstrations that were going on. A 1968 campaign, that was actually a convention in Chicago that went sideways, as you'll recall. So all this stuff is in the background. And meanwhile, we've got men and women in a combat zone, you know, looking for meaning and reason of all this. I mean, can you imagine what they must have gone through? Of course, you can imagine in part, but you've had a chance to talk to some of these guys.
Yeah. A lot of them came home. I came across one anecdote about guys who would come home and there were actually wigs available that they could put on, because obviously they're over there with very short haircuts. And some right. of them came back and actually wore wigs so that they wouldn't appear to be military and their families wouldn't be targeted and they wouldn't be harassed in public. So that just kind of shows you the extremity of what we're talking about. And Hamilton's on the ground for 12 days, and he becomes kind of an underground hero for a lot of guys mm-hmm. in Vietnam. They keep asking, they wake up the next morning, they're like, is he still free? Mm-hmm. So he became, this kind of, I don't want to say urban legend, but mm-hmm. he's a 53-year-old guy who's out there alone in the Vietnamese jungle, and they began rooting for him.
Wow.
So I spoke to one guy who was head of Joker, who was responsible for bringing, airmen who had been shot down back alive. And he said, I couldn't get my radio operators, my weathermen, I couldn't get them out of the unit. They wouldn't go back to the bunks and sleep. They wanted to keep working this mission. So it just goes to show you that they were desperate for some kind of significance to give their lives for, because 11 guys did give their lives, and they wanted it to mean something.
Exactly. You spoke with the family members of the 11 that perished in this mission. What was their general sentiment?
Surprisingly, a lot of them did not begrudge Hamilton, his survival. I mean, they were not bitter about the guys going after him. They said, if that was my son out there, Hamilton probably would have gone out on his own and done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just tell you one story. There's a guy named Jim Alley, who was a photographer in the Air Force. Didn't want to kill anybody in war, so he volunteered he was drafted, and he has to go in as a photographer. So he's about a week away from getting on the Freedom Bird, his flight home, and he's had a premonition ever since leaving Florida that he's going to die in Vietnam. So this mission comes up. He's not really integral to the mission. He's a photographer. And at first he stands up and refuses to go. He says, I'm not getting on that bird. And his crewmates are shocked, but they leave it at that. I mean, it's his decision.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to disobey the order. And just minutes before the helicopter takes off, on the tarmac, they see Jim Alley with his helmet heading towards the chopper. He jumps in with his crewmates. It goes off to try and find Gene Hamilton.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't come back. The bird was shot down. He died probably on impact on the ground. Mm-hmm. And he had told his parents, if I don't come back, I want you to adopt a baby boy. And they did, and I spoke to him. His name is Tim Alley.
Mm-hmm.
He's a firefighter in Florida.
Wow.
And he's been, he's been a substitute for his older brother his whole life. So
wow.
People are still living out these stories, even though it's almost 50 years ago. People were telling me, I cried about this mission last night, and we forgot about it decades ago. So
exactly.
Yeah, motivation to go on.
I mean, and there are, like you said, there's so many stories here that can be told. And the fact that this was a story never told before, even though Hollywood took a shot at it, but you said,
mm-hmm.
As you said, they really didn't do it true justice, but your book, Saving Bravo, is that opportunity now to give a voice, to those 11, to Colonel Hamilton and the others that participated. And, this goes to the spirit of the military, and that, at the basis of this is you don't want to leave anybody behind. I don't care what branch of the service is. It's just something that is, I don't know if they give it, when everybody gets their shots when they go in or what, but it's just,
right.
You are there, you're alongside. I mean, shoulder to shoulder and back to back. and relationships that occur in a battlefield deal. I didn't experience a battlefield situation, but I spoke with enough, and it's almost, I got to tell you, for somebody who's in the military and not in a combat zone, you almost have a sense of envy, if I can say that with all due respect.
Sure.
Because of what they experienced. My dad, you mentioned the Battle of the Bulge. My dad was a medic at the Battle of the Bulge with General Patton. And what he must have experienced and how many men saw his face, with their dying breath. It's incalculable.
Absolutely.
But my dad didn't talk about that. And that's, for a lot of people who are in the service and endure these kind of situations, it's very private and very personal. And to get people to open up, I'm sure for you, is a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, in certain cases, there's a guy named Jose Astorga who's a machine gunner for one of the rescue helicopters, and he didn't get killed, but he was taken POW. He was taken prisoner of war, spent a year in a North Vietnamese prison, came back and trained to be a mechanic in the Air Force, and found he couldn't do any work. He hasn't held a job in 40 years because the memory of his crewmates dying in that helicopter, they burned alive, and just what's clearly PTSD has, has completely reshaped his life. But I asked him, was it worth it? He said, hell yeah, it was worth it. We got him back.
Bless his heart. Bless his heart.
So incredible. Yeah. Just these stories of self-sacrifice are really key to the book.
And, Stephen, I got to tell you, for the last, decade or so, it's still relatively new, our awareness of PTSD, we're handling it, we're accepting it, but it's still tough, and it's tough on those soldiers. I mean, when you've got 22 vets committing suicide every day, I mean, this is a serious issue. And, there's been a lot of focus and a lot of support, for our people, but we've got a long ways to go yet to honor, these veterans who've been in combat zone. It's as it is right now, because we're an all-volunteer army, roughly 1% of the population puts on a military uniform. And of that 1%, you probably have another 1% of that, that experience a combat zone and bullets flying around you and being exposed to death and the kind of things that they've been exposed to that go along with war. I mean, it's heartbreaking. It's shocking. And I'll tell you, the courage that these men and women continue to go through that endure PTSD is incalculable.
I agree. And I think the situation in 1972 is not that dissimilar from today. I mean, a lot of these guys and women are fighting in what are really forgotten wars. I mean, those wars are not in the headlines anymore, but guys are still coming back. I don't think the situation is anywhere near what it was as far as their homecoming goes, but some of the situations with the VA and just the social acceptance of how long PTSD lasts. And in many ways, it's a lifetime kind of affliction. So, we have to recognize these guys and not forget them when they come home and the parade is over.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, Stephen, we got to leave it there. Stephen Talty, his just-released book, Saving Bravo. I'm telling you, this is going to engage you. Never-before-told story of one of the greatest rescue missions that not just the Vietnam War, but the entire Cold War, and that's quite a statement. Stephen, thank you so much for being with us. Appreciate it, and congratulations on the book. Where can they go to get their hands on it and for more information, by the way?
They can go to Amazon.com and just search for Saving Bravo. Or if they want to go to their independent booksellers, it's pretty much everywhere right now.
You got it. And we're going to link it on our website, too, at BillMartinezLive.com. Stephen, again, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Godspeed.
Marijuana has unleashed a green gold rush across our nation. It's creating $10.8 billion in new wealth a year. And every day, it's transforming more and more Americans into millionaires. In an historic event, former Speaker of the House John Boehner reveals how you could become one of them. Join him online for the American Cannabis Summit. Attendance is 100% free, but space is limited. To secure your spot, text JOIN to 44055. This event is the first of its kind ever. John Boehner. retainer and an esteemed panel will reveal which cannabis stocks are primed to deliver life-changing windfalls in the weeks and months ahead. Plus, they will show you how to become a cannabis angel investor, backing the hottest startups before they potentially become worth billions of dollars. To join American Cannabis Summit, text JOIN to 44055. Attendance is free. Text JOIN to 44055.
Do the letters IRS